We're developing our players, and our young players are playing with a lot more confidence.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd and I'm the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at RedRock_Beeble. We're going to talk about Tuesday's three-game NBA slate, and then we're going to preview a massive, massive 12-game Wednesday. So,
let's get to it.
All right, we will indeed get straight into it because there is going to be a lot for us to talk about. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. And, of course, that goes to
LeBron James.
Yeah, it does. LeBron was pretty good. Once again, 39-1-7. And he didn't get that one rebound until very, very late in the game. 7 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, and he hit 6 triples, 14 of 22 from the field, and made all 5 of his free throws. At the way things currently stand, he is the number one player in fantasy. It's been a long time since LeBron's been the number one guy, but he has been extraordinary this season. 28-8-9, over 2 threes, 1.5 steals, 1.1 blocks, 57% from the field, which is out of control. He hasn't got to that level since, I think, his second last season in Miami. He's also back to 78% from the line and hasn't been there for 5-6 years either, and 41% from three, which is a career high mark for him. So his efficiency is through the roof, and this is all while he's carrying a team that's missing, you know, Kyrie Irving, obviously due to the trade, and Isaiah Thomas due to the injury. He has been an absolute stud this season, improving numbers. I can't believe that he is averaging these numbers. They are really crazy. Look, the minutes will probably come down at some point when Isaiah Thomas returns. I think we all expect that the playing time will dip by a minute or two, but he's not going to come out there and play 31 minutes a night or 32, probably down to 36, maybe 35 and a half. He's more focused defensively, putting up more defensive numbers. The efficiency could even improve with Thomas around. He has been an absolute stud so far this season, killing it. And if you drafted him, and look, there are some places and some people who didn't consider him a first-round pick, which I thought was bananas. I had him, I think ninth was the spot that I was looking to take him in most drafts. It was either him or Jokic, depending on how you were looking at your league. But in a lot of cases, I think I took LeBron over Jokic in one league. But he has far exceeded my expectations this season, especially with that improvement in efficiency, which I did not see coming, especially the 41% from three, which is what he is currently shooting. He has been monstrous, and he gets himself the monstrous line of the night for Tuesday's action. I need to tell you about a great sponsor of this show. They've been a great supporter of this podcast and the entire Locked On Podcast Network, as we have Draft Wednesdays right across the network, and that is the guys over at Draft.com. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? Draft is a daily fantasy site, but it's not the standard site where you go and make your lineup based on player salaries and salary caps. It is just like a snake draft. So you go into a three-person draft, three people in there, and you just take turns picking people. So like your regular season-long leagues, but for DFS. Draft is my new favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft as well. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but only if you use my promo code, which is LOFANTASY. That's right. You can play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOFANTASY. There's never been a better time to go and try out Draft, and it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you'll love it, they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with that promo code LOFANTASY. Let's talk about the waiver wire line of the night, and it goes to Frank Mason III of the Sacramento Kings. George Hill was out of this game with strep throat. De'Aaron Fox lasted only 11 minutes due to his quad contusion playing up, so Mason was able to put together one of his better games, 16 points on 7 of 9 shooting, 2 triples, 1 assist, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. It wasn't a massively high bar to clear with only 3 games on to get the waiver wire line of the night, and Hill does say he's going to be back for Wednesday. But if Fox has to miss some more time, logic would dictate that Mason would get more minutes. The problem is that logic doesn't always follow around Dave Yeager and what he does with his lineups. For example, the last game where Fox was out after halftime, we saw fewer minutes than Mason than we had in any other game previously. So weird stuff always does go on with Yeager. He's been putting up some okay numbers this season, Mason. He's a top 200 player over the last month. I think it's going to be a stretch for him to become a standard league guy this year, especially with Fox and Hill both there. Maybe if Hill gets traded at any point, Mason can move in and become maybe a top 170 guy. But I still think that that's maybe pushing it for him to become a 12-team league player. But he's been impressive. Hasn't come on unsustainable shooting or anything like that. He's been dishing his assists. He scores. He hits his threes. He gets steals in decent quantities as well. He's been fine. He hasn't been brilliant, but he's been better, I think, than you could expect a second-round pick as a third-string point guard to have been this season, and there are going to be opportunities for him to have decent performances. So he's a name to watch, but he's more a deeper league guy. I don't really value him massively highly in Dynasty either. I think he could perhaps have a couple of top 150 seasons in his career, but I don't think he's ever going to become a top 70 or top 80 sort of a guy, so bear that in mind when you're considering whether to trade for him or add him in Dynasty formats. The young gun of the night is Mason's Sacramento teammate, and that is Budrick Hield. 24 points for Bud, 5 rebounds, 2 assists with 3 threes and 3 steals on 9 of 19 shooting and 3 of 3 from the free throw line. But like everyone in Sacramento, who knows what's going to happen with Budrick on a night-to-night basis. The previous game, he played just 17 minutes, but in this one, he was up to 28. The game before, just 22. He was on a streak of 6 consecutive double-digit scoring games before last game's 7-point weirdness, and got back into it here. And one of the things that's really been fueling his value this season has been his steals, and he got another 3 here. He's the 112th ranked player this season, 87th over the last month. But that last month numbers are coming in large part because he's shooting 49% in that time, averaging 14 points with 2.5 threes. If that shooting doesn't sustain at 49%, which I don't think it will, then his shooting comes down, his scoring comes down, his field goal percentage comes down, his three pointers come down, and he doesn't do much else. 0.2 blocks, 1.2 assists in that time, and 3.2 rebounds. The steals have been nice. They've been, somewhat of a surprise considering how poor he was in that category last season. In fact, he's like at double the steal rate that he was last season, which is obviously a huge improvement. But it's all going to come down to that shooting percentage and whether he can maintain a 27 or 28 minute role, which at this point it feels unlikely. It may happen, but again, Yeager's changing the lineup pretty much every single day, so it's really hard to get a full feel for things. And even today, when Bud did play 28 minutes and play well, he still played fewer minutes than Garrett Temple. So if you can figure that one out for a team that is developing their young players, even though Bud's not all that young, he's still decently young, he's younger than Garrett Temple, I know that much. There is still some consistency concerns in terms of what his overall production is going to be. He's fine to own in 12-team leagues, but he's far from a must-own guy. But he is one of the maybe top two or three guys on this Kings team, and he is someone that you can have a look at without feeling super, super confident just because of the dickery that goes on with Dave Yeager in this team. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Maybe this one's a little bit unfair. Rajon Rondo did suffer a knee bump early in the first half, but he was able to return and play the second half. But he was poor. He only played 14 minutes. He went scoreless. He had 2 rebounds and 3 assists, missed all 3 of his shots. Remember that little run that he had after he returned from that one game rest? 38 minutes, 13, 2, and 18 with 5 steals. Yeah, Rondo. Next game, triple-double, 13, 12, and 12 with 3 triples. Yeah, Rondo. The next 3 games, he has combined in 3 games for 14 points, 9 rebounds, 12 assists, and 3 steals. So, piss poor, pretty much. And average over that time, 4.7 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists to be the 144th ranked player in that time frame. Hasn't taken a free throw. In fact, for the season, he has taken a total of 2 free throws. He hit them both, but he's taken 2. He just avoids the line like it's the plague. I think that these last couple of games are probably more indicative of what we can expect for Rondo rather than that little And if you go look at his game log, you can see this little bump and you go, what's going on here? All these double-digit scoring nights. That was when Tone Davis was out and he was playing much better. And then when Davis returned, his numbers have dropped off. I still think that he should be owned in all leagues, but expecting that level of production with everyone fit and firing and healthy is probably not an ideal scenario. But let's wait and see on him. Still a guy to hold. At this point, we will adjust our thoughts on that if things need adjusting. All right. There are three games here in the NBA for us to talk about from Tuesday's action, a pretty light slate, so we'll get into that. And then it's got a big Wednesday, 12-game Wednesday to talk about, so let's get stuck into that right now. We will start with Rajon Rondo's New Orleans Pelicans. They took on the Washington Wizards. The Wizards get the victory. Once again, it's Tone Davis.
Me, Tone, Jad. Totally charged, Tone.
Totally charged, Tone.
Spot on, Tone.
Yeah, Tone was pretty spot on, but he went down again with an injury. Had to start the second half in the locker room with a wrist problem. He got x-rays on it and it was fine. And then he came back out and played 37 minutes, 37-9 with a 3 and a steal. And this is, again, I don't know what it is. Either he has remarkable healing powers or he has really sensitive nerve endings when something happens right away. So he got knocked on the wrist and he's like, oh, shit,
Oh, no!
Maybe that's what he said. He goes and gets x-ray, all fine, he's back on and he's ready to go. So I don't know if he's just got fantastic recuperative powers or if he's got low pain tolerance or extra sensitive nerve endings. It could be a combination of all three of those, but this is a pattern with Davis. He gets hurt, spends 10 minutes on the sideline, comes back in, misses a game, comes back. Like, whatever seems to happen, he seems to recover from it really quickly, despite everything always looking bad in the moment. And that can be frustrating, but he still gets the minutes. This is a game. And people can say, oh, he left the game early. Yeah, he did. And played 37 minutes and scored 37 points with 9 rebounds. Still a bloody good performance. But it is incredibly frustrating and, I guess, hard-in-mouth type stuff when you see Davis to the locker room. Boog had 26, 13, and 4. A good night from him, while Drew had 13, 6, and 5 with 2 steals and a block. Not quite the level that he had been at previously, but still pretty decent. Well, Etuan Moore's minutes were fine, 32 minutes, 12, 2, and 3 with 2 steals on 50% shooting. So he's an okay guy to own in 12-team leagues. He probably should be owned in most of them. The minutes feel like they're going to be pretty stable, but it doesn't mean that he is going to be this top 100 beast, as he was a top 55 or top 60 guy at one stage, given how well he was shooting. In fact, he missed all 4 of his threes in this game, which if he had hit 2 of those, like he'd been doing for big, big stretches, there would have been a much more sexy game from him. With Rondo limited, Ian Clark joined the rotation. 2 points in 17 minutes for Clarko, while Darius Miller had 2 points in his 25 minutes. Not much else to really talk about with the Pelicans. On to the Wizards, Brad Beal. A big game from him once more. 26, 5, and 4. Did roll his ankle, but played through it. 5 triples and 2 steals. And he is playing much better now that Johnny Wall is back. Speaking of Wall, 18, 6, and 10 with 4 triples. The minutes were good, 33. The shooting percentages were not, just 33% from the field and 50% from the line. But it's good to see those minutes coming back after he missed some time with that knee injury. There was no Otto Porter Jr., so Kelly Oubre Jr. started in his place and played 30 minutes and did not much. 10, 2, and 1. I just don't know what I think of Oubre. Like, he has moments, but he's wildly inconsistent as he heads into his third season. He's improved a lot, but he still isn't good. And I don't really ever think he's ever going to become a top-class fantasy person. He might have a couple of top 100 seasons, but I don't ever see him becoming a force by any stretch. But if we're speaking about forces, Mike Scott's shooting just is unstoppable. 73%, 11 of 15 shooting, 24 points with 4 rebounds and 2 triples, but played just 23 minutes. And that's one of those cases where you go, shit, he's really hot, the numbers are there, but of course, that is unsustainable, and he does nothing else in any other areas, and the minutes are still at 23 despite him getting red hot. So while it is fine to have a look at and go, oh, you know, let's add him, we all should know 100% there is absolutely zero sustainability in what Mike Scott's doing at the moment. He won't be a 70% shooter. He won't be a 60% shooter, and he's not going to be able to put up 24 points on 15 shots in 23 minutes as a regular occurrence. So add him, but depends. Really pay attention to who you're dropping in this case, because it's a flash in the pan type of moment in more deeper league stuff. that is unlikely or impossible to be able to continue. Tomas Satoransky played backup three in this one after having the backup point guard role, 6-7 with 2 steals. I really like Satoransky. He's not going to have a big enough role this season to be useful in anything outside of probably 18-team leagues, but I do like him long-term. While Markieff Morris had some foul trouble, 13-4 in 20 minutes. I don't think that he is a 12-team league guy. Morris is definitely not a 10-team league guy, and I don't think he's a 12-teamer. Marcin Gortat, better give him a shout-out. 30 minutes, 10-14 for the Polish Hammer with 3 blocks. His minutes had been down. His performances have been piss poor. This was a good performance going up against Boog and Tone to put up those sort of numbers. I wouldn't be rushing to the wire if he was still available, though, because he's just as likely to play 24 minutes and have 6-4 in the next game as is the Polish Hammer's style. The next game, the Sacramento Kings and the Philadelphia 76ers. Georgie Hill was out. So, once again, Dave Joerger, another change to the starting lineup. He doesn't just change the backcourt. He changes everything, because now in this one, we had Willie Cauley-Stein starting alongside Zach Randolph. We're never going to get Cauley-Stein and Labissiere. Just never going to happen. But he is changing things up. I think at the end of the year, I really want to check which team has the most starting lineups. And if it's not the Kings, I'm going to be absolutely stunned. Cauley-Stein, 9-6 in 30 minutes. Wasn't the best night. He took 10 shots, but only hit 3 of them. He is a must-own guy in 12s and 10-team leagues, I believe. Labissiere, only 4 minutes, so really developing him quite well. 2 points in those 4 minutes for Labissiere, while Randolph had 27 points in 28 minutes on 19 shots with 5 rebounds. Yeah, Randolph's doing what he needs to do. But I still don't like the way they use him. I still don't like the way they feature him as their number one offensive player. It just doesn't make any sense. You've got to develop some of these other guys. I just feel like he's in there just putting up numbers for the sake of numbers, and it's not really useful to anything for this franchise in the future. Justin Jackson started the second half in place of Fox. 21 minutes, 3-2-2 with a steal. And, of course, when you get that opportunity with Hill out, they started Bogdan Bogdanovic. So Bogdan, who played 30 minutes, I think, in the last 3 games, he played just 18 minutes. The logic is astounding sometimes from some of these coaches. I'm not sure why you would limit Bogdanovic to 18 minutes, fewer than Malachi Richardson, fewer than Frank Mason III, fewer than Justin Jackson, in fact, when he was the guy that was out there starting and had been playing well and could actually run things for this team. But who knows what the hell goes through Joerger's head. That's why, you know, owning any of these guys is almost an impossibility. Yeah, Budrick will probably play 16 minutes in the next game. Bogdan will go back to 30. There's no rhyme nor reason to anything really that Joerger does on a consistent basis. I still think that Bogdan can be a 12-team league guy. Garrett Temple, who'd been playing minutes in the teens in the last 2, has seen his minutes rise again because the Kings are developing their youngsters. 33 minutes for Temple, 9-8-4, and he's solid out there. We know that. But he's not really going to be a 14 or even 16-team league sort of a player. Onto the Sixers, Joel Embiid was out due to the back tightness. They originally said he was going to be playing on Tuesday, but then a medical decision came down to say that his back was an issue. So Amir Johnson got another start, 7-9 in 18 minutes, while Rashawn Holmes played the bulk of those minutes, but wasn't all that good, 4-6 with 2 blocks. Now the Sixers do play again on Thursday. So if Embiid is out there, you're going to get more use out of Holmes. But Trevor Booker returned early. He was supposed to miss this game due to an ankle injury, so he was back. So if Embiid plays on Thursday, even though it is a limited slate, Holmes is just not going to be able to find enough minutes behind Šarić, Embiid, and Trevor Booker and Amir Johnson all in the mix. Maybe they eliminate Johnson from the rotation, but Holmes is as hot and cold as they come. But still, owning him and holding him for Thursday is worth doing, and then seeing how that all plays out. Benny Simmons had 13-12-9 with 3 steals, while Bob Cove had 17 points, a pair of threes, a pair of blocks, and a steal. But some poor shooting along with Šarić, who had 11-9 on 30%. Jared Bayless, one of his better games, 15 points in 26 minutes. And JJ Redick had to leave the game with hamstring tightness. So if Redick happens to miss, the 2 games that Redick's missed so far this season, Bayless was the starter in those games. So we could see some streamability for Thursday on Thursday for Bayless, but I don't think he's going to be a super strong guy. And in the last game, TJ McConnell played 31. He played just 21 here. So he could also draw the start if Redick happens to be out, but I think it's more likely to be Bayless with his shooting ability. Or supposed shooting ability. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs had a massive, massive comeback. They were down by about 20 points, I believe. Got to about 3 points up and ended up losing by 3. Kevin Love, only 30 minutes, 21-10 with 5 triples. Ty Lue's just refusal to play him down the stretch in games is quite baffling. Yeah, these are really good numbers for Love. He was playing well. And the refusal to do this, along with the impending return of Isaiah Thomas means that Love is going to lose some value. He's been really good this season, but he's going to lose some value. I've got no doubt about that. Jay Crowder played 36 minutes and had 10 and 6, which is just, it's not good enough for those sort of minutes. Of course, we're leaving him for the 16-team leagues. Tristan Thompson eliminated Channing Frye from the rotation completely. 18 minutes for Tomo, 9 and 5, but he is just a deeper league guy. It was a strong game from Dwayne O'Wade as well, 14 and 4 with 2 steals and 4 triples in his 26 minutes after he missed the last game due to resting. He is more of a stream guy, so perfect stream for today, and a 14-team league sort of a player. The plumber, J.R. Smith, only 18 minutes in this one. He did struggle with some fouls. On to the Bucks. Now, I don't want to constantly bash Jason Kidd, but when he says just shit that is flat out wrong and stupid, it deserves to be said. Because with a couple of seconds left in the game, Chris Middleton went to the line with the Bucks up 2. He hit his first free throw to put the Bucks up by 3. Only a couple of seconds left, mind you, in this game. Put them up 3. And then Kidd, in all, and I think one thing that gets forgotten about Kidd is he is an epic shit bloke. Like, beat his missus, drink driver, gets coaches fired as a player, forces his way out of organizations from front office power plays to get managerial power. He is just an outright shit bloke. Like, just does shit stuff all the time. And he's in over his head in this coaching gig. So, Middleton hits the first free throw, so the Bucks go up 3 with a couple of seconds on the clock. So, Kidd calls out to Chrissy. Chrissy, miss it. Miss the free throw. Which is a curious decision at that point, because obviously a made free throw would put you up by 4 with a couple of seconds left. Middleton did miss the 3. LeBron grabbed it, three-quarter court heave, and it missed. Bucks win by 3. Kidd's a genius. Oh, we beat the Cavs. Good on us. But as I do say quite often, I probably haven't said it often enough recently, just because the result turns out the way you want it doesn't mean the process or the decision-making was correct. Because that decision is absolutely 100% incorrect. And then when asked about it, they said, Jason, did you tell Chris to miss the free throw? And he said yes. Because, and I'm not going to quote him because I don't have the exact quote in front of me, the reason he wanted him to miss the free throw is because he was worried about a 4-point play. Worried about a 4-point play. Now, if Middleton hit that second free throw, and he's a pretty good free throw shooter, the Bucks would have been up by 4. So even if they converted a 4-point play, the game would have been tied. They wouldn't have lost. So the free throw goes in, Cavs can get the ball inbound, and they can go down. All you do is you don't contest the shot. You put every person standing around the paint and no one contesting 3-point shots. So they can have the wide open 3-point shot. That's fine. And it goes in and they lose by 1. The Bucks, you can't hit a 4-point shot unless there's a foul. So don't contest the shots. Pretty simple in my mind. Instead, he wanted them to be up by 3 so that if the 3-point shot goes in, it's a tie and goes to overtime, which is what he was trying to avoid by not having a 4-point play go in. It's not like a 4-point play could have even won the game for Cleveland if Middleton had hit that shot. And this is not the first time he's done this. We saw it the other day when he was fouling the Pistons when they were up late because they wanted to play the game of quick twos and save their timeouts. So he did the job for them and saved their timeouts by fouling them when he was up by 3. He just has no concept of anything. It is really extraordinarily frustrating. And this stuff, it's basic maths, and I'm not sure he knows numbers. I'm not sure he understands it, because there is under no circumstance should you have been trying to miss that free throw. It is just confusing. Yanni played 40 minutes. Let's hope his legs don't fall off. 27, 14, and 8 with 2 steals for him. Bledsoe, 26, and 5 with 2 steals. He has been absolutely fantastic since joining Milwaukee, while the Muppet John Henson, 15 and 6 with 2 steals and a block. I believe he is a must-own player in 10 and 12-team leagues. Now, the Bucks got a bunch of guards back. Tone Snell was back. Matty Dellavedova was back. Jason Terry was back. So Jason Kidd made a change to his last game starting lineup where DeAndre Liggins was starting, but instead of reinserting previous starter Tone Snell in there, he decided to move Matthew Dellavedova into the starting lineup. move Dally to the point guard spot, which I think is something he said specifically, we're going to move Dally to play point guard and move Bledsoe over to the two, when you've got a Rookie of the Year point guard in Malcolm Brogdon sitting on the bench. Now, Dellavedova played, and he played 11 minutes. And I get the feeling that Kidd is going to, he's going to love this, and he's going to be like, oh, look at this, mate. I'm going to play these start. I'm going to put these bullshit Keith Bogan starters in, play them 10 minutes, and then run things after that. It just doesn't make sense. If you're going to move Bledsoe to the two, put Brogdon in at point guard. Real simple. Real simple. Now, Brogdon did play 30 minutes, 16 and 3 with 4 triples, but Dally was limited to 11 minutes. Jason Terry didn't play at all, and Tone Snell played just 23 minutes. So when Tone gets back up to 30 minutes, he's playing like 33 or 34 before his injury. Yeah, where does Brogdon go from there? 26, 27, like who knows how it's going to work. DeAndre Liggins still got his 16 minutes and put up 1 rebound and 1 assist. And it is still December, so Jason Terry and the Vets, they need to be getting their playing time also. I just don't understand what this all means. Now, I'm still holding Brogdon, but the arrow is pointing in a really unflattering direction for where things are going to go. It's also good that we got 6 minutes out of Sterling Brown as well. Like, I'm not really sure what the purpose of that is with all these guards back. And of course, they did just sign Sean Kilpatrick, the sexy boy. They made him active for this game on his two-way contract, so one of his days is up, and didn't play him at all because all the guards were back. And this is something that I did mention when talking about Kilpatrick. There's just going to be way too many guards here now that everyone's healthy. And I thought the fact that they signed him and wanted to use him meant that Dally or Snally or one of those guys is going to be out longer term. But no, they're all back the first day that Kilpatrick's around. So some weirdness going on with the Bucks, but really, that shouldn't really surprise anybody. All right, that does it for all the action from Tuesday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then, because we've got a lot to talk about, we've got 12 games for Wednesday to talk about. I'm going to come back and do that in a sec, but I've got another song by the band Con Etiquette. They sent their music through. So I believe yesterday I said the wrong name of their song, so I do apologize to Wes and the guys in Con Etiquette, but I'm going to play another one of your songs now. Hopefully I've got the names labeled right, otherwise I'm going to look like an idiot. But this is a song by Con Etiquette called 1-2-3-4, and then we're going to be back to talk DFS for Wednesday. Back, and we're going to talk perfect DFS from Tuesday before we get into Wednesday's slate. On FanDuel, Tomas Satoransky 23.4 and Frank Mason the third 26.5. What a point guard combo that is. Brattles Beal 43 and Budrick Hield 39. LeBron James had 57.5 and Yanni Adetokounmpo had 60.6. Mike Scott 29.3 and the Muppet John Henson 33.2. While Marcin Gortat had 37.8 for a total of 350.3 points, and that cost $59,600 on DraftKings. Dwayne Wade, 27. Budrick had 39.25. Yanni had 61.25. Kev Love, 44.5. Gortat, 37.5. Rattles Beal, 44.25. Mike Scott, 31. And the Muppet, John Henson, also 31. That cost 315.75 points. And that cost a grand total of $50,000. All right, we have got 12 games to get stuck into, so strap yourselves in. Go take a piss before you listen to this, because there's lots for us to talk about here. of course. Let's go to the first game of the day for Wednesday, and it is the Toronto Raptors and the Charlotte Hornets. Serge Ibaka missed the last game with knee soreness. He is listed as questionable, as is Trevion Graham for the Hornets. If Graham misses, Frank the Tank likely gets more playing time and maybe a little bit extra for Johnny O'Brien. And those guys, that might be important, especially Kaminsky as a GPP guy. If Ibaka is out, then Jonas Valanciunas gets a pretty significant bump. You're going to see more minutes for Norm Powell, maybe CJ Miles, and the Jedi OG Anunoby. So some options there that do open up in GPPs if both of those guys happen to miss. Let's talk point guards in this one. There's not a lot that I love in this game from a DFS point of view, to be honest. Kyle Lowry is at 8,500. I think he's a not bad option for 40 points here, but with 12 games on, I think you're going to be able to find better options for that salary. The Hornets have been pretty good in allowing opposition point guard to put up numbers, so Lowry could be used there, but I wouldn't feel super strong about looking at him as a cash guy. And then on the other side of things, you've got Kemba, who's $700 cheaper, 7,800 for Walker, and he's averaged 39 the last three times he's come up against Lowry and the Hornets. But this season, Lowry and the Raptors, the Raptors have been really stingy against opposition point guards, and Walker's recent numbers haven't been fantastic. So I think that, again, like Lowry, he's more of a tournament guy, not really a cash option. You've got DeLon Wright, who's back, and that's going to cut into Freddie VanVleet's opportunities, and Michael Carter-Williams is not worth it. At shooting guard, Nick Batum has been playing much better of late, but his price at 6,300 is a little bit off-putting, but he's been consistently getting you around 30 points with 30 minutes, and that's not a bad play on this sort of a slate. He's got that 35 to 40 point upside. I think he's not a horrendous cash option, because even if his shot doesn't go in, he can rack up the assists, he can get rebounds, he can get some steals, and then if he comes up with a big offensive game, that can really turn the tables. Jez Lamb at 4,700. He had 28 in the last game, but he's a little bit limited. I wouldn't rely upon him for cash, and I don't think that his ceiling is really high enough to be considered. While 8,700 for DeMar DeRozan has struggled previously against Charlotte, so they could throw Michael Kidd-Gilchrist there. Batum's a not a bad defender on him. 8,700, again, it's GPP worthy, but I'm not sure his upside is high enough, and I think his floor is sufficiently low that he is someone that I wouldn't be all that interested in. At small forward, Kidd-Gilchrist is at 5,000. He's coming off a big performance where he had 35 points, but relying upon Kidd-Gilchrist is not a winning strategy, I don't think. If Trevion Graham is out, I might consider Kidd-Gilchrist as a tournament guy, but his upside is not all that high. But if you get 35 out of him at $5,000, you'd be really, really wrapped. So if Graham is out, he is worth considering. Whereas the Jedi Anunoby at 4,000, not really feeling that. At power forward, Frank Kaminsky's up $500 to 4,100 on FanDuel. That's because he had 38 points in that last one. And if Graham is out, I think he is absolutely worth a look, maybe for cash, but definitely for tournaments. I'd lean more tournament if Graham is in, but if Graham is out, I could consider him a cash option, but it's not like he has been overly consistent either. As for Ibaka at $6,000, if he plays, I'm in on him at $6,000. The only query I have is if he's going to play or not, but he would be a solid option who's been playing much, much better over the last 2 weeks. Marv Williams, no thanks. At center, Dwighty Howard, $8,200. I think in terms of cash plays in this game, he's probably as close to it as it gets. Real chance for 38 to 42 points in that sort of range, which is nice at that salary, a decent sized floor on him as well. You got Valanciunas as an option too, but he is at 5,500. But if Ibaka is out, he had 43 in that last game. If Ibaka is out, I would feel much, much better with going for Jonas. We already know that Bebe Noguera has been ruled out, so it's only Poeltl and Valanciunas. And I think you might get a 27-21 minute split between those guys. And Valanciunas, if he gets 27 minutes, we know he's got that ability to put up numbers to bring back that salary. So if Serge is out, I do really like Jonas in this matchup. Let's have a look at this over on DraftKings now. More value on DraftKings than there is on FanDuel, but still, with a 12-game slate, we're not looking to really stack this game in general. I like Dwight at 7,600, but I really, really like Nick Batum at 5,700. I think that's super strong for him. I think he's a real, really, really good chance of getting 5 and probably 6x worth of value in this one. Kemba Walker's also much more appealing over on DraftKings at 7,100. His last three games with DraftKings scorings against the Raptors have yielded 42 points, while Kyle Lowry at 8,200. I would rather go with $1,100 less on Walker than take Lowry there. 8,300 for DeMar DeRozan. is also much more appealing over on DraftKings than on FanDuel, but still not my greatest option, where Valanciunas is only in play, I believe, if Ibaka sits, whereas if Ibaka plays at 5,900, I think that's definitely playable. Let's get on to the next one. We've got the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 8, and the total is 200.5 points. Originally, Daniel Tice was ruled out of this game, having his nose reset, but he has been upgraded to questionable. I want to talk about blokes who are like Wolverine. Tice, you know, gets ruled out of things, and then he's back and playing. Oh, he's not going to be on the road trip, miss the next two games, and he plays them. Oh, he's going to miss the next game due to surgery. Nah, I'm back. Don't worry about me. So he is in business there. The ones we want to check on, though, of course, are for Miami. Goran Dragic is questionable. It looks like he's leaning towards playing, whereas Justice Winslow is doubtful with a knee strain that's copped, make him cop a few games on the sidelines. With Winslow out, Jordan Mickey, Bam Adebayo, and Kelly Olynyk, and Jim Johnson's out, of course, as is Whiteside. So those three blokes are going to have to carry the bulk of those minutes at the in the front court, and there's value in all those. And if Dragic is out, that opens up for Joshy Richardson more, and of course for Tyler Johnson. But I do expect Dragic to play. At point guard, Terry Rozier is at $4,000. No, I don't see that. Kyrie is at $8,000. The Heat have been a troublesome team for point guards this season, but I think Kyrie at $8,000 is a strong cash play on this slate, whereas Dragic at $6,100 has just been completely underwhelming. Maybe that's to do with his elbow, and even if he plays, I'm not going to be considering him a play. Tyler Johnson at $4,500 is definitely one that I'd want to lock in cash if we hear that Dragic is unavailable. At shooting guard, Marcus Smart, really can't rely upon him. In the last game, I think he hit four threes and still only had 23 points. He's at 5,600, so it's not a terrible price, but he would be tournaments only for me. While the Duke, Wayne Ellington, is always for tournaments, and Deion Waiters at 58. If we hear that Dragic is out, then Waiters at 58, I think, becomes a pretty decent cash play. Otherwise, he's more of a tournament guy. At small forward, Jaylen Brown at 5,700 has been really, really underwhelming. In fact, just twice in his last seven games has he broken value at 5,700, which is not a high price tag. So I won't be looking at him as a cash guy, especially in a lower tempoed game, which this will be against the Heat. Well, Joshy Richardson's now up to 5,800, and that's because he's averaging 42 points over the last three and 34 over the last five. If we get Dragic out, then Richardson at 58 feels like a really, really strong cash play. And I still would consider it marginally a cash option, even if Goran is in. At power forward, Jordy Mickey at $4,000. I love that. I think that's actually got cash value in this one because we're assuming that Winslow's out. So I do really like Jordy Mickey at $4,000. He's averaging 25 over the last three games. He does it with blocks, high rebounding, and can be a really decent DFS play. Given the situation, Kelly Olynyk's at 5,900, a tournament guy only, but I'm not really loving that. While Jason Tatum at 56, the numbers recently have been pretty good. 30 points over the last three, 27.5 over the last five, and you get 27 at 5,600. That's not bad for cash. I can consider Jace Tatum a guy to have a look at. For sure. At center, Al Horford up to 7,800. Look, he has been absolutely crushing it, averaging 41 over the last three. The Heat matchup has been a problem for him in the past, but most of that's to do with Hassan Whiteside. You know, Bam Adebayo is not quite the same as Whiteside in terms of opposing him, presence. We're talking about Horford being able to actually tower over Adebayo, which he's not able to do with Whiteside, so that could have a factor. So I don't dislike Horford here. I just don't think that he is a total lock guy, whereas Adebayo at 4,900, he's been putting up some good numbers as well. He should start, he should get decent minutes, but I don't feel as strongly about him as I do with, say, Jordan Mickey, and I think Mickey can be used as a cash play, whereas Adebayo is probably more of a tournament guy with, you know, 35-point upside there. On DraftKings, I like Adebayo again for cash here, 4,600, and I love Jordan Mickey, 3,700 for him is really good. Kelly Link at 5,400 leans a little bit more cashy on DraftKings, but still not really feeling much from him. He's been getting into foul trouble pretty consistently. And of course, we look at Joshy Richardson at 5,900 if Dragic happens to be up, but they've bumped his salary by 1,100, which makes him a tough guy to use if Dragic is in. Deion Waiters is also up to 6,200, so somewhat of a fade. And I like Al Horford a lot more on DraftKings. At 7,300, he is absolutely in play for cash, whereas Kyrie at 8,000, not really loving that quite as much as what I do on FanDuel. And he's worth looking at, but he's definitely not a first ballot lock sort of a guy. And of course, Tyler Johnson, as we talked about on FanDuel, if Dragic is out, then he is a really strong option. Let's go to the next one. It's the Sacramento Kings and the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are favored by 5.5. The total is 207. The Kings are the only team on a back-to-back here. George Hill says he is likely to play, while De'Aaron Fox, I'm going to assume that Fox is going to be out in this one. Lasted just 11 minutes on Tuesday with that quad contusion. Had missed the previous game there. So I think that he misses time here. Now, what Jaeger does with the starting lineup is absolutely anybody's guess. Does he just substitute Hill in for Fox? Does he take Bogdanovich out again? Does he put Budrick Hewitt? Look, who knows what he's going to do? He could change things. And normally he'll have one injury and then change three starting spots. So there's so much uncertainty with Sacramento that using these guys in cash can be a really tough thing to do. At point guard, Frank Mason III, with Hill likely back and Fox likely out. Yeah, Mason, you could have a look at 4,200. He had 27 points today, which is obviously a great return, but I wouldn't be looking at him at anything else than a tournament play unless both Hill and Fox is out. Then he's a great cash play. Now, the Nets are one of the best teams for point guards to go against, so he does have that in his favor, so you can consider that. Spencer Dinwiddie at 7,300, playing well, but hasn't quite been living up to that level lately. I think he's more of a tournament guy. The Kings, surprisingly, have been quite difficult for point guards to go up against, so that is something to bear in mind with that elevated price on Spencer. Well, De'Aaron Fox at 44, even if he plays, I have zero interest in using him. Georgie Hill I do like, though, at 4,600. The minutes have been up for him lately. The performances have been better. If he is ready to go, which it appears that he is, at 4,600, I think he's a nice, cheap cash point guard. At shooting guard, Caris LeVert's at 58. He's just been, you know, really putting up some good numbers. A little bit quiet in the previous games before last one. But at 5,800, I think he's got that 35 to 40 point upside and, you know, probably a 26 or 27 point floor, which makes him a pretty strong play at that salary. Budrick's at 49. Who knows what we're going to get? That makes him a tournament guy. Great Budrick today. Do we get 16 minute piss poor Budrick tomorrow? That's the question. Well, Bogdanovich, I just can't. I can't trust what Jaeger's going to do in a tournament year, but I'm not sure his upside is really high enough. At small forward, Damari Carroll's at 5,800. That's a fade from me. While the blue swimmer, I have no interest. He played well in the last game, shot well, 21 points. But just not enough. He just doesn't do enough in any other areas, and his shooting hasn't been reliable recently. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's at 7,400. I like Rondae here. I think this is a great opportunity for him. In fact, I think he is worth looking at as a cash play if you are inclined to go Kings in cash, which is not always the greatest decision. Quincy Acey, the other guy to pay some attention to. We don't expect Jahlil Okafor to be in the rotation. Acey hit 4 threes in the last game for 22 points. Probably an unrealistic expectation to expect him to get back to that. Well, Zebo's at 6,800, so the salary's come down. It is a back-to-back, so I do worry that maybe they rest him, so he could be, I think he's fade territory here. At center, Will Cauley-Stein, 6,000. Really good opportunity for Cauley-Stein. I'm in on him. A little bit disappointing in today's game, but I'm bang on that. Cash, you can use him in. I'm okay with that. While Jarrett Allen at 39. Really, at this point, we can only consider him a tournament flyer in case he comes out and has 3 or 4 blocks, and that really boosts his numbers right up. I don't think we really should be considering Tyler Zeller or Costa Kufos as strong options. On DraftKings, Carroll at 4,900 is a world of difference to his price on FanDuel. So I like Damari there at that price. Now, his recent performances haven't been great, averaging under 20 over the last 5, but it's a good matchup. And I think he can get back in business and drop you a 25 to 27 point game, which is pretty good at 4,900. I like Spencer Dinwiddie and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson a lot for cash. 6,700 for Spence and 61 for Rondae is one of the better cash plays of the entire day on DraftKings. So I do really like Hollis-Jefferson at that $6,100 price point. Budrick, Frank Mason, both of those guys, again, look at in tournaments if those options arise. While Bogdanovich, very similar story to what I said about him with FanDuel. Not a lot to change with him there. Let's have a look at the next one. It is the Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 4.5, and the total is 213.5 points. We don't have any indication that Miles Turner is going to be listed on the injury report, but he was questionable heading into the last game with a calf problem, and then he was shit-housed during that game. So don't be surprised if we don't get Miles Turner in this one. We know that Mike Muscala is doubtful, so he won't be playing. The Baptist John Collins is off the injury report, so that's good news. Now, whether that means he gets 24 minutes, 27 minutes, or the bullshit 17 he got in the last one, that remains anyone's guess. At point guard, did I give you the totals for this one? Indiana favored by 4.5 and the total 213.5. If I didn't, I just did now. Dennis Schroeder is at 7,800. Has been pretty strong lately, 37.5 average over his last three. It's far from a sexy, great upside tournament move, but I think he's pretty good in cash. I think he's got at almost a 30-point floor here in this matchup, higher pace sort of game as well. I do like Schroeder at that 7,800. Daz Collison at 5,800. Only played 24 minutes in the last game, which was a little bit concerning, but his numbers have been pretty good. He's a 40% three-point shooter again this year. I think for the third consecutive season, he's shooting 40% from three. I don't think there's much upside there in Dazza, but he's not a bad cash option if you're really struggling at point guard. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo, 9,600. It's just high, but he's doing it. I know it's high, but the guy's averaging 50 points over the last five, and then he comes in with a great, great matchup. I think this is a huge opportunity for Oladipo to really drop a monster, which he does in every game anyway. But I really do like him here for cash and for tournaments. Whereas Kent Bazemore, who had been a real cash staple recently, has risen up to 6,300. That is making me extremely nervous because he can throw in turds relatively often. But I don't dislike him here. The matchup is not absolutely horrendous, although he has really struggled in the past against the Pacers. But that's the Paul George Pacers for a lot of that. So those 16 points he's averaged the last three times out doesn't really apply too much, but I don't think that at that elevated price that he's a lock as he had been on previous days. At small forward, Bojan is a tournament guy only. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, I think that's fine for cash. 5,800 for him, 45-point career night in the last one for Princey. The minutes will be fine. I'm not really worried about Bogdanovic shutting him down. I think that he's a real 30-point sort of guy here, Taurean, so I think he's a good cash option. At power forward, Ersan Ilyasova is at 5,000. Do we get hot shooting Ersan? Do we get shit shooting Ersan? I don't know, but I know his minutes are up, so that absolutely puts him into the GPP pool. And then Domantas Sabonis on the other side at 4,700. If Turner is in and there's no problems, then it is hard to use him. But in the last game, he had 28 points, played 29 minutes because Turner was struggling, and at 4,700, that's brilliant production. So I actually like him in a GPP, even if Miles does play. And then if Miles is out, then I'd smash that for cash. Really, really be interested. The Baptist is at 5,700. Just way too much uncertainty for me to look at John Collins there. While Thaddeus Young at 6,100. I feel like that's pretty strong for cash. 29-point, 28-point sort of guy with 35 to 36-point upside. I feel like he is in a pretty decent situation in a really good matchup. At center, Miles Plumlee, no way. Miles Turner, that's too high for Turner. It is a good matchup for centers. We've seen that so far this season. But at 7,600, laboring with a calf problem, it's going to be GPPs at best for Miles Turner. On DraftKings, you got Schroeder for cash, which I like at 73. I like Oladipo at 9,200 as well. I think that's a pretty decent cash play. And Ilyasova as a tournament guy at 5,100 has that level of upside. Now, the Baptist is a little bit more appealing over on DraftKings at 5,300, and I would consider him a tournament guy, whereas Kent Bazemore, on the other hand, way worse spot for him on DraftKings at 6,500. That is, I know he's been playing well, but that is too high for me to really feel too much confidence in Baze. Whereas Miles Turner at 6,600, that should absolutely make it into your tournament pools, given that he can go off for 40 or 45. The Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder, no spread release for this one. I guess we're waiting to check on the status of Don Mitchell. The Don is questionable with a toe contusion. Derek Favors is questionable with concussion, whereas for Oklahoma City, Steve Adams is doubtful. So we're likely to get another Dakari Johnson start and more minutes for Patrick Patterson and Jeremy Grant. Now, on the Utah side of things, if Don Mitchell is out, you can really fire up your Rocket Rodney Hoods, Ravishing Rick Rubios, and Alec Burks actually comes into consideration there as well. And if Favors is out, then we're going to get Joe Johnson, Epe Udo starting. So both Johnson and Udo come in. Udo, not necessarily going to be a must-roster guy, but he's going to have cash value and going to have tournament upside, whereas Johnson hasn't really done all that much in his starts so far, but it is going to be an interesting situation to pay some attention to. At point guard, Ravishing Rick at 5,100. If you look at him, averaging 26 over his last five, that's really good at 5,100. But if everyone is healthy with Rocket back, I think it's hard for him to get to that. But if the Don is out, then I'm in on Rubio at 5,100. And I would really, really be interested in using him in cash if Mitchell is out. And that's a big if at this point. Russ Westbrook, 11,400, has been putting up some pretty good numbers. Really good, actually. 61-point average over his last three. And if you are looking for a high-priced guy, he's not a bad guy to go with. He wouldn't be the first guy I'd start my lineup with. Again, a slower-paced game against Utah. You might be looking at maybe a 55 instead of a 60, but 55 at 11,400 is still a pretty good return. So he's not a bad high-priced guy here at all. The Dons at 7,100, a price reduction for Mitchell. Absolutely, I'd be looking at him for tournaments if they say he is ready to go, of course. While Andre Robertson at 4,300, we shouldn't and have any interest. Rocket Rodney, 5,700. Just absolutely love that if the Don is out. He had 42 in the last game, even with Mitchell playing those 21 minutes with some foul trouble and obviously the toe bothering him. But at 5,700, I like Rocket for 5,700 in cash if the Don plays, and I would use him in cash and tournaments if the Don is out. Alec Burks at 3,800 would be a great GPP option if Mitchell is ruled out, and you could throw him into your lineups if Mitchell's still undecided by the time that lineups lock. At small forward, Joe Johnson's at 3,500, 19 points in the last game. That brings back value at 35. If Favors is out, I think he is absolutely worth a look in a cash game just to get some cheap guys in it and go with your studs in the other spots. Whereas Paulie George at 7,900, I'm just not feeling it from him and this Thunder offense in general. Jingling Joe at 5,300. Pretty much zero upside for Joe, but a really safe floor, so I like it for cash. At power forward, Mellows at 6,400. He has just been abysmal. 21-point average over the last five. I'm not really keen there. Well, Derek Favors at 55. If he is ready to go, I would absolutely look at him as a GPP guy. Starting at center, higher efficiency, more shots, more rebounds, more blocks, and that's going to total hopefully 30 to 32 points if he is ready to go, which we don't know yet. At center, you've got Dakari Johnson, and Epe Udo at 4,400. So if Favors is out, I don't mind that. But remembering the last game that Favors was out, Udo started. He played 27 minutes and put up 17 points. So he's far from an absolute home run. At minimum salary, he would have been, but he's not. He's at 4,400. So, you know, I think having a 20-point expectation on him is reasonable, and 30-point upside, which he did have a 49-point game, of course, but I don't think that's a realistic expectation on Udo. On DraftKings, yeah, not a lot to really love in this one. The Don at 6,600 is absolutely worth a look. And in fact, if he is cleared to play, I think he'd actually be worth a cash look, but we don't know that yet. Rocket Rodney at 56, of course, in cash. If the Don is out, and Derek Favors at 53 would have a level of appeal also. Jingle and Joe at 5,000 is a strong cash-only play, while Rubio, like Hood, is really going to benefit if the Don is out. Very similar situations to what we have over on FanDuel. Westbrook is less appealing on DraftKings at 11,400, so I'd probably lean on one of the other bigger name stars rather than him in this environment, while Mallow's down to 5,800, and that should get a level of interest from you. Hasn't really been anywhere near that level much, but he can go off. He can get a 7x, so I think that makes him a GPP guy, at least much more so than what he is on FanDuel. The next game, we've got the Lakers and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are favored by 14. The total is 225.5. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will not play because this game is outside the state of California, and his legal troubles prevent him from traveling, so he won't be in. The last game that he missed due to these legal issues, Josh Hart started and played 32 minutes. Now, whether that will be the case again remains to be seen, but that is definitely an option. We also know that Brook Lopez is out for the next 3 weeks or so. They started Kyle Kuzma in the second half. I don't know that they'll necessarily do that. I can imagine Luke Walton going with Andrew Bogut. They could also bring up Ivica Zubac or Tom Bryant there. But it's going to be Randle, it's going to be Kuzma, and it's going to be Nance who get the bulk of those minutes there with Lopez sidelined with some sort of token bullshit to either Bogut or Zubac. I'd be stunned if Zubac came in and played like 25 minutes. I would be stunned. At point guard, Chrissy Paul, 10,200. He's averaging just the casual 52.5. Over the last five, absolutely just rocketing along at 5,200 in a really, really good matchup. The blowout is probably the biggest concern here for Paul, so I would rather look at him as a GPP sort of a guy rather than a cash guy just because of that blowout risk. For Lonzo Ball, 7,400, he is delivering on a relatively consistent basis, and I don't actually hate that for him, even in cash. Look, he's averaging 41 over the last three, 40 over the last five. His lowest score has been 26, which is not a disaster. I think he's fine for cash. I think he's going to get his numbers, and his shooting is coming around. At shooting guard, Jordan Clarkson, 4,800. Do we get the Clarkson who was putting up good numbers to start the season, or the one that's averaging 15 over the last three? He has an opportunity, but he's played the bulk of his minutes this year at point guard, not shooting guard. So don't expect for him to be out there getting 35 with KCP sideline. That could go to Joshy Hart at 3,900. I think that's absolutely worth a look. He had 31 in that last start with Caldwell Pope out, and at 3,900, you could definitely lock him in cash, but I think he's an excellent tournament pick here. Jim Harden, 11,100, the same risks as Paul with the blowout. His numbers have been marginally muted, and he does have the sore knee, so he's probably somewhat of a fade here, but if you're looking for a consistent, at minimum 40 points, Jim's going to bring it with that 60-65 point upside. But yeah, given the circumstances, given the knee, given the blowout nature, probably a guy to look at more for tournaments than anything else. Brandon Ingram, 7,200, averaging 35 over his last five, which is right on where it needs to be. I actually like him quite a bit for cash here, so I think he's a strong option, whereas PJ Tucker and Trevor Ariza, the two small forwards for Houston, just not really doing it for me. They just seem to be priced $400 to $500 too high for each of them. Yeah, Tucker could have a much larger role. Ariza's playing 40 minutes a night with Marmute's sideline, but it's not necessarily translating into big points. 24 a game over the last three for Trev, despite the fact that he has played 42 minutes in those games. That's not a really great sign. If you want to go revenge games, Ariza did play for the Lakers at one point. It was a long time ago, but he did play for them. So maybe you want to go back into the Wayback Machine for revenge narrative. By all means, you can dial that up. At power forward, love Julius Randle here. Probably one of the best guys to build a lineup around, I believe. 5,500 on FanDuel, 32 in that last game in 31 minutes. He's going to have an opportunity to play big minutes, play a lot of center with Brookie out. And I really do like him here. He's not a great defender, but given that Houston can go small, Randle can hang in those small lineups, and I think that he is absolutely the guy that I would be interested in almost starting a lineup with. So I do really like him. Larry Nance at 49, probably more of a tournament guy, while the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, at 5,400, almost a cash lock as well, given the extra opportunity he should be afforded with Lopez sidelined. At center, Capella, 7,900 for Clint. It is a good matchup for him. He's been killing it. He had 57 in the last game, which is obviously sensational, averaging 40 over his last five. But I'm not 100% confident in him for cash just because that salary's risen so much. I'm more of a tournament guy with a clear upside to beat it, but the floor probably isn't quite where it needs to be on FanDuel, I don't think. Nene, Andy Bogut, I don't think we need to get into those two guys too much. On DraftKings, Brandon Ingram at 6,500 and Julius Randle at 54 are both really, really strong cash play. And Trevor Ariza at 48, I think, is a lot more of a cash play on DraftKings. The three-point shooting bonus, the minutes are high. I feel like he's almost locked into 25 points, which makes him a strong cash play, while Joshy Hart is absolutely minimum. $3,000, that is the one you put in there, and that is going to enable you to free up some salary to get guys like Harden or Chrissy Paul or Russie Westbrook over on DraftKings is by getting Josh Hart. Now, he's going to be highly owned, but in cash, I think you're going to have him in there. I think he's going to be like 70% owned, 80% owned maybe on DraftKings, but for cash, it is going to be tough to miss out on him because that just gives you so much more flexibility in those other areas. Let's go on to the next game now. We're going to talk about the Orlando Magic and the Chicago Bulls. Sorry, the streaking Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are favored by 5, and the total is 210.5 points here. Aaron Gordon has been ruled out. Evan Fournier is doubtful, and Aaron Aflalo is questionable for Orlando. So we're going to be getting, hopefully, more Mario Hezonja goodness, some more Wesawundu, perhaps. Aflalo is the interesting one. If he is out, then it opens up for Shelvin Mack and DJ Augustine as well. Also, on the Bulls, Paulie Zipsa is questionable, but he's not really having any sort of impact. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton is at 6,900, has not been providing anywhere near that level of value, but he has got a stellar record against the Bulls. So I would, if you're going to lose him, it has to be tournaments. He averages 37 the last three times he's played them, but the problem is his last actual five games have yielded under 20 points per game, which is nowhere near where it needs to be. Chrissy Dunn is now at 7,900. I know he's playing well, but that's just too bloody high in most cases to rely on for cash. Now, the Magic have been probably second to the Nets in terms of point guard ease, So that does give Dunn the boost there, and I would absolutely be looking at him as a tournament guy, but for cash at that sort of a price, I'm not ready to commit. Shelvin Mack at 3,700, he had 27 minutes in the last game. That yielded 7 points. I would hazard a guess that it will yield more than 7 points if he gets another start, but he would be a GPP sort of a guy. Well, DJ Augustin played 30, and he had 11 points at 3,800. Both of those guys could be tournament guys. I just don't think I would ever consider using both of them. At shooting guard, Justin Holiday was strong in the last game, but had been poor before that. 5,100, there is a tournament play there, but not cash. And the small forwards is where a lot of it's going to happen here. I love the cash for Jono Simmons. 6,600, averaging 37 over the last 5. That's almost lock-in-able to me as a cash guy that I know is going to give me that. The hammer, Denzel Valentine, no. Mario Hezonja up to 4,800 in lieu of his 45-point outburst in the last one. I think the ownership's going to be pretty high on him. So in a tournament, you might want to fade him, but I still think in cash, he's going to be able to put up that level of production necessary at 4,800. So he would make a good cash play. David Nwaba at 47, I just don't really feel interested in using Nwaba. He may be in a tournament, and he has played well against Orlando in the past, but I just don't think he's good enough to do it consistently. At power forward, John Isaacs at 42. Still easing his way back from ankle injury, so I won't go there. Nick Mirotic, 7,100 now. 45 points in the last game, even with Markkanen back. Will that continue? All signs point to probably not, but he is a GPP guy. I think I would not be interested in him in cash. Because even in that last game, with Markkanen easing back, he still only played 26 minutes. Now, 45 points in 26 minutes is obviously ridiculous. But at some point, there's going to be a night where he has a bad one. Maybe it's this one. So I'd look at more tournaments. Markkanen's at 59. I don't feel confident with him. I feel confident he'll get 25 or 26. I just don't feel confident he's going to get 30 or 31. At center, Vucevic is at $10,000, just killing it pretty much every game. I feel like he's not quite a lock, but he's pretty bloody close to it at that price tag with Az Gordon out and with Evan Fournier unlikely to play. I think Vuc is definitely an in-play guy here. Rob Lopez at 5,300. Saw his minutes limited, so we could see more Punch Blob, Nick, and Lowry lineup. So I wouldn't be putting huge amounts of faith in Robin Lopez. Now, I did skip over Punch Blob. He's at 5,200. He's averaging 30 points over the last 5, but remember, 4 of those came without Markkanen. Probably more of a tournament guy, much like I'm viewing Mirotic. On DraftKings, Chrissy Dunn's at 7,200. That's tournament upside. Great opportunity for him here. I do like the salary there. So if you're going to use him in cash, DraftKings is the place to do it. Markkanen at 5,100. I actually think that's not a bad cash play on DraftKings where you can use him and get your 25 or 26, and then anything above that is a real bonus. And Lord Alfred Payton is down to 5,600. Now, I know he hasn't been good, but with a 40-point average against the Bulls the last 3 times, 5,600 as a salary, I am ready to go with that, and I am much more confident with him on DraftKings. It shows you how much different salary can make than I am on FanDuel with him. You can always, John Simmons is a little bit too highly priced to lock in cash, but you can still do it. And Mirotic at 6,400, very similar to how it is on FanDuel when we're looking at him as a tournament type of guy. But if you used him in cash, I wouldn't be the wrong decision. Detroit and Dallas, we have to have a look at. Dennis Smith is questionable with that adductor strain that's kept him out the last few games. Yogi Ferrell has played big, big minutes in his absence, so that's another thing that could happen. So you have to pay attention to see whether Smith is actually ready to go or not. At point guard-ish, Smith is at $4,000. No. Reggie Jackson at 5,600. Been a little bit worried with what I've seen from Reggie lately. The minutes have been reduced, so I'm not really going to be feeling too much from him. Well, JJ Barea at 53 has been strong in category leagues, but for DFS, not quite reaching that threshold he needs to. While Yogi Ferrell, the minutes have been big, but at 4,900, he needs to do more than put up 25 points in 42 minutes. But he's still, if Smith is out, I think he's still not a bad cash point guard, especially get some cheap guys in there. As for Dennis Smith at 5,700, I wouldn't be messing with him in his return if he does actually return. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews is always tournaments. Devin Harris, no real interest in him. Lukey Kennard, who is likely going to start again for Avery Bradley, who's out for the next week. Kennard comes in at 3,600, so that should give you a level of interest, but it's only going to be for tournaments because he has started the last 2 games and played under 19 minutes in both of those, and that's not the recipe for DFS success. The recipe for success could be Reggie Bullock, who's at 3,700, had 29 points in the last game. Now, I highlighted that he wasn't going to shoot 65% in these games, but at 3,700, he doesn't need to. And with Bradley out, the minutes are going to be fine. I'm in on him. That is a great, great play. Really like it. In fact, I'd almost say it's one of the best, maybe the top five FanDuel players of the day at 3,700 for Bullock. Stan Johnson at 3,800. Well, he had 27 points in that last game with Brattles out. I have much lower level of confidence in Stan Johnson than I do in Bullock. So I would look at him as a tournament guy, but absolutely in the pool of players with Bradley sidelined. The pencil Harrison Barnes, 7,200. Maybe a little bit too high for him. He's not really a high upside guy. I'm not sure his floor is high enough to consider for cash, but he's never a horrible choice in cash. At power forward, Toby Harris, 6,600, has been not even sniffing that recently, so I'm not really keen. Well, Dirk at 4,800. I think Dirk at 48 is a tournament guy at this point, but not really a strong one. While Maxi Kleber at 4,500. Kleber quietly averaging 25 over the last three, which at 4,500, big win. 31 points for him in the last one, but I don't feel confident in his consistency. But he can put up these big-ish type performances that would make him maybe intriguing for GPPs. At centre, Drummo at 9,700. Weirdly has struggled against Dallas in the past, but this is a different Andre Drummond this season. That salary is probably a little bit too high, and for an extra $300, you can take Nick Vucevic on FanDuel, and that's probably the direction that I would go in. But Drummond is an okay pivot, especially in a tournament type of situation. On DraftKings, love Reggie Bullock here. Love it at 3,800. That is super, super strong. And Harrison Barnes at 6,700 is a great cash play. Drummond at 9,100 is much stronger on DraftKings as well. I think we're looking at a guy who has that pretty comfortable 50-point upside here. So I do like Drummond quite a bit over on DraftKings. Dennis Smith, yeah, same sort of story. If he is out, you can go for Ferrell at 5,200 and Maxi Kleber at 4,000 as a tournament sort of a player. We're getting there, guys. Only four games to go to round out a 12-game Wednesday. The next one is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 2, and the total is 216. We don't know if Manny Mudiay is going to play with that ankle issue. He was warming up before the last game, so indications would be that he is likely to play. But then Gaz Harris, he's dealing with a shoulder issue. Elbow after a fall in the last game. If he is out, then it's going to open up minutes for Fartin Will Barton. It's going to solidify Torrey Craig, and it's going to make Malik Beasley a little bit more interesting for Denver. We don't know how Dr. Malone is going to view Nick Jokic, whether he starts him and plays him 30 minutes, what he does with Fartin Will Barton. But we know one thing for sure is if there's one player on this team that Malone's given the Dutch rudder to, it is Torrey Craig. So that's going to have an impact on Barton if Gaz plays. Because if Gaz plays, I think it's going to really limit what Fartin Will Barton's going to be able to do. So it is something to pay some sort of attention to. Let's have a squiz at the point guards in this one. The Blue Arrow, 5,600. Who knows what Malone's going to do? He played him just 25 minutes for 14 points in the last game. And even including that one, he's averaging 33 over the last three. So some wild inconsistencies from Malone in terms of his use of Murray. I'd be okay with looking at Jamal as a tournament guy, and I wouldn't actually despise it as a cash play. And then we've got Jeff Teague, who comes in at 6,400, a good matchup for Teague, but his numbers have been struggling, so I would probably lead to a fade on Teago. Gaz Harris at 6,700, been putting up strong numbers. I think that's fine for cash for Gazza. Well, Wigo's at 6,100, and he has just been the definition of putrid. But he does have 40-point upside. I just don't think he's going to get there. If you want to run him into a tournament, sure, I personally wouldn't. Fartin Will Barton at 6,200, my confidence is sapped in him, especially with the newfound love of Torrey Craig. That is going to limit Barton a little bit, so I'm not really all that keen on using him. If Gaz is out, I'd be more into using into Fartin there. Jamal Crawford had 29 in his last game. That brings his five-game average up to 15. So it shows you how piss poor he'd been prior to that, so not really looking at that too much. While Beasley at minimum salary, you could throw Malik into a tournament if Gaz and Manny are both out. These small forwards, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, 4,700 for Baby Neck. He had 31 in the last game. If Gazza is out, I think that Wilson is a guy to have a look at. I don't feel overly strongly about using him, though, whereas Jim Butler killing it, 9,400 for Jim. I think that's a really, really good option to use him in a cash-type situation. I think that's really strong. He had 59 in the last game despite dealing with back problems. I think he's got a real opportunity for another monster performance. Torrey Craig at 3,700. Despite the big minutes and hitting every one of his shots, he still only put up 23 in that last game. So expecting a perfect 100% shooting night from Craig is probably unrealistic, meaning that I don't know how high his upside actually is, because that's probably the perfect game from Torrey Craig. 30 minutes, 5 of 5 shooting, and still yields just 23 DFS points. Can you use him in cash at 3,700? Sure, and that can enable you to get Jim Butler in and to get Westbrook in or your Jim Hardens in. That might be an okay option, but I don't think he's really got 30-point upside at all, which sort of takes him away from being a tournament player. I like Taj Gibson in cash at 5,700. A poor performance from him in the last game, but you can almost write 27 in permanent marker for Taj, and that's what you're going to get. Whereas Trey Lyles, a guy that is killing it, he's at 4,800. Not worried about Ken Faried. I think that Lyles is pretty steady at that number, and I think that's not a bad cash one to have a look at 4,800. I thought they would have bumped his salary up more than that. At the center, Nick Jokic, 8,700. Absolutely a GPP guy. Because we know how good he is, we just don't know what Malone is going to do, and that makes him a hard guy to rely upon in cash lineups. Whereas Townsie's at 10,300, 55-point average the last three times he's matched up against Jokic. I think that at 10-3, he's a viable alternative to Nick Vucevic and a preferable one to Andre Drummond if you're looking at high-priced centers. So he is absolutely worth a look, even in a cash situation. Although the frustration from Tom Thibodeau could come out and we could see his shots limited, although that hasn't really been too much of a problem lately, thank God. Over on DraftKings, Townsie's at 9,000. Now, that's a super good price, so I love that for tournaments. I love it for cash, whereas Jokic at 81, still more of a GPP sort of guy. Most other things sort of fall similar to as I was discussing on FanDuel. Farton, Will Barton, a play if Gaz is out. Jamal Murray as a tournament type of guy. And Trey Lyles, they have bumped him a little bit more on DraftKings, so he's the same price as FanDuel, but of course, same price means less value given the salary structure. He's at 4,800, but averaging 30 over the last three, so no reason why you can't consider him someone that you want to use. While Torrey Craig's at 36, the same sort of concerns I had for him on FanDuel apply for him on DraftKings. Let's get into the next game now. It is the San Antonio Spurs and the Portland Trailblazers. The Spurs are going to be without Kawhi Leonard. They're going to be without Tone Parker on the first night of a back-to-back. And we've seen over the last few back-to-backs, Pop has gone crazy. You know, pulling guys at halftime and then also not allowing them to play in that second half.
Giggity!
But in all seriousness, you've seen Dan Green not play the second half, Pau Gasol not play the second half, Rudy Gay not play the second half, Pat Mills not play the second half. I don't know if that's what he'll do here, but it is a distinct possibility. So using those regular Spurs contributors is fraught with danger. But the opportunity opened up with Leonard and Parker out is real. So DeJounte Murray at 4,300 as a point guard is someone you absolutely have to be looking at. In fact, I think that's almost a cash lock type of a guy. Really, really like that. Pat Mills at 3,700. You look at that and you go, that looks fantastic. And if Dan Green misses, maybe he gets some of those shooting guard minutes there as well as backup point guard minutes. And at 3,700, that's so, so cheap. But Mills, he's averaging only 17 over his last five. But the increased opportunity could allow him to have a bigger game. So I don't actually hate him for cash either. Dame Lillard at 8,800, not a bad cash play. I prefer Kyrie in that 8,000 price range. But Lillard is averaging 40 over his last five. I'd want it to be a little bit higher. And I don't feel super strong about using him against the Spurs, who do limit point guards pretty significantly. At shooting guard, Bryny Forbes, minimum salary for a reason. He had 7 points in 26 minutes starting for Dan Green. Now, if Green is out, he would absolutely be a GPP guy, especially with the other guys resting already. And one of the, I think he'd be one of the top GPP options out there. But just remember, he did shit the bed in that last game. Whereas CJ McCollum at 7,000, strong for cash. Not sure there's much tournament upside in this one. Green's at 4,700, no. Ginobili at 4,000. Well, he's going to play this one. He might be out in the second game of this back-to-back. Whereas a guy like Brandon Paul at minimum salary, absolutely a GPP differentiator. In his last five games, he's had a 32-pointer, and that was one of those games where everyone was resting, so pay attention to Brandon Paul. Rudy Gay's at 5,600, and yes, they might sit him, they might limit his minutes, but at 5,600 with Kawhi out, I think he is worth a look in a cash play, whereas Kyle Anderson is actually likely to return ahead of schedule. He's at 5,300. I wouldn't be using him first game back from that knee injury. I just don't think that's a great spot to use him in that first one back. Evan Turner, big minutes at small forward for the Blazers, 4,300. Only put up 23 in that last game. Not sure how high his ceiling actually is there, but there's something to maybe squeeze out. At power forward, I don't know what I'm going to see from LaMarcus Aldridge. We're going to see 35 minutes. We're going to see 26 minutes. He's at 7,900, and with no Kawhi, that should get you interested, but it should get you interested for tournaments only, because if he plays 24 minutes, then you're screwed and you're not getting anywhere near where you need to. Whereas on the flip side, 3,700 for Davis Bertans, what if they play him 24 minutes? Then he is going to really, really crush through that number and be an interesting tournament guy. So he is a GPP option, but there's just so much uncertainty with the Spurs team. Al-Farouq Aminu at 5,200, I find limited upside, low floor is a stay away. Whereas center Yusuf Nurkic, he was back in business in the last one. 37 points in only 28 minutes. I think he's not a bad cash play, but more of a tournament player. Zachy Collins, 3,600, averaging 16 over the last three games, seems to have a relatively stable rotation role. That's not a bad cash play if you want to go stars and scrubs. Get your 17, 18 with 25-point upside. I don't think he's really going to come out there. In fact, in his last five games, his lowest score is just 14, which is definitely not killing you at 3,600. It's not where you want to be. You want to be at 16 or 17, but that's not killing you. And that might enable you to get some other big-name guys in there. So look at Zachy, whereas Pau Gasol, to me, is a real stay-away here. I think he's going to be seeing very limited minutes in this back-to-back. But again, just so much unknown with the Spurs. Over on DraftKings, a couple of tournament guys I like. Bryny Forbes at 3,400, and if Dan Green is out, I like that for cash a lot. DeJounte Murray at 41. That's probably more of a cash play. Or it's a tournament play as well, but it is a cash one. Well, Evan Turner at 38. That's a good price for a starting small forward who could play 36 minutes. So at 3,800, I would look at him as a tournament guy, but he could also really go missing. But like I talked about before, like in a cash setting at 3,800, if he comes out and gives you 17, it's not the end of the world. In fact, that's a pretty good result. So I think Evan Turner could be a cash play as well. Dame's at 85. That's not bad. With the DraftKings scoring, I think he is worth investigating. And I love CJ McCollum at 6,400. I equally love Yusuf Nurkic at 6,400 in this matchup as well. But again, weirdness will ensue. Can pretty much guarantee that. The Phoenix Suns and the Phoenix Suns and the LA Clippers. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to get from the Suns here. It's Tyson Chandler's third game in a row. It's the first game of a back-to-back, so there is a big, big chance that he sits this one and Greg Monro starts.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
But I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. They have changed their rotation. Alex Len seems like he is locked in a backup role until he's not. We thought that Mike James was locked in into a starting role, and then we thought he was locked into a backup role. And now I don't even know that's going to be the case. What are we going to get from Isaiah Cannon? Just these Suns guys are so bloody hard to work out. For the Clippers, the Rooster is out. Lou Williams has been upgraded to probable, while Wes Johnson is also out with that foot issue. So we're going to get some more Sammy Decker. We're going to get some more CJ Williams, some more Jamil Wilson, some more just absolute crap shows going on in the wings there in the front court for the Clippers. At point guard, Milosh is at 5,400. He had 20 points in the last game. This is a bloody good matchup for him. Point guards have done very, very well against the Suns. This is a 30-point upside situation for Teodosic, so I'm interested. Whereas Austin Rivers, just horrible in his last game, but big minutes, lots of shots, didn't hit them. 5,800, you could do a lot worse than using Austin Rivers. Tyler Ulis, Isaiah Cannon, Mike James. Well, Cannon had 38 in 27 minutes in the last game. He's at 4,100. James is at 4,000 and Ulis is at 4,400. If you're going to use one, it's probably going to be Cannon. But again, trying to predict what's going to happen with these point guards, it's literally an impossible task. So don't look to lock any of them in cash. Although if you put Cannon in a cash game, I don't think it would be the worst decision. At shooting guard, Lou Williams at 7,700. No Rooster. He's going to have to shoulder another large scoring load. I think that he's worth a look in cash at that sort of a price tag, whereas Troy Daniels at 37 is always your GPP, let's get hot, hit 8-3 sort of a player, whereas his cash reliability is pretty limited. At shooting guard, CJ Williams' minimum salary, he is actually averaging 17 over the last three. 17 points, 3,500. It works to fit some other guys in, and I would expect that he would start in place of Wes Johnson. At power forward, Jamil Wilson, 3,700. Much like CJ Williams, he's going to start. He's probably going to get 20 points, which is absolutely fine at that price tag. So again, not a high upside guy, but not a horrendous cash option if you're going the stars and scrubs route. Another guy you could consider in that sort of a build is the table, Montrezl Harrell. 3,800 for him, averaging 18 over the last three. He had 20 in the last game. He can fill it up, so he does have some tournament upside. And I wouldn't 100% shy away from him in cash. A guy I would shy away from is minimum salary Marquise Chris, because he is averaging 5 points across his last three games. Now, of course, he can go off at any time, so really hard to rule him out of cash, out of tournaments. But he is just putrid at the moment, absolutely putrid. Dragan Bender's at minimum salary as well. He's getting minutes, but 29 minutes last game, 9 points. That's the sort of fantasy guy. He is just not a high output player. So you could look at him as a GPP guy, but I don't think his floor is high enough for cash, and I don't think his ceiling's high enough to really pique your interest. I'm interested in Alex Len, though. He's up to 5,700 because he's averaging 34 over his last five. I am ready to go with him as a tournament guy. I am ready to get dicked over by Jay Triano. And I'm actually also ready to say that in cash, I don't hate Alex Len. I love Jondre Jordan in cash, 8,000, you know, 35 to 40 feels like almost a minimum for him against his Suns team. His numbers have been a little bit down in the last three, but in his last five games, averaging 42, sign me up for DeAndre Jordan. Over on DraftKings, Milosh at 5,200, I really like in both formats. Austin Rivers is strong. TJ Warren, much better option on DraftKings at 6,200, but has really been struggling without Devin Booker around, so more of a tournament guy. DeAndre at 75 is strong, and you got the same options with those cheap guys. Sammy Decker, Jameel Wilson, CJ Williams, all of them are worth a look, especially CJ at 3,300. That's super cheap for a guy who could start and play 25 minutes, so pay some attention to him there. You got Isaiah Cannon at 4,500, which takes a lot of the level of appeal away from him in cash on DraftKings, but he does have that tournament upside given how well he played in the last outing for the Suns. Let's go on to the last game of the night. We are finally there. We're going to get this one in under an hour and a half, I think. The Grizzlies and the Warriors. The Warriors have upgraded Draymond Green, Zaza Pachulia, and Sean Livingston all to questionable, while Brandon Wright is doubtful once again for Memphis. We know that for the Warriors, if Draymond and Zaza are out, Omri Caspi and Jordan Bell get the value. If Shawnee Livingston is out, Pat McCaw becomes a tournament guy, but no, not a must-play guy, while Andre Iguodala also gets a boost in that situation. If we assume that all these guys play, that's how I'm going to talk about this game right now. At point guard, Livingston's at 3,500. No. McCaw, no. Andy Harrison, 4,200, was looking strong. The last two games, he's back to good old Andy Harrison, so not a lot to love there with him. In fact, this is just one of the shittest DFS games for the day, assuming that all these guys play. Mario Chalmers is at 3,600. He played 26 minutes in the last one. Only 10 points, but the minutes have been up for him, so absolutely you could look at him as a tournament guy, but that's probably about it. At shooting guard, Klay Thompson, 7,300. Not really living up to that value, even in the absence of Steph Curry, and Steph is going to be out at least another week. Everyone, he's going to miss Christmas, and he's going to be reevaluated in another week. So still, at least, I reckon 2 weeks before we see Steph back. Tyreek at 7,500. Probably a tournament sort of a guy here. He's been a little bit up and down, and that inconsistency makes it hard to use him in cash. McLemore, no way. Uncle P, maybe, but I'd rather take a guy like a Troy Daniels, for example, as my three-point specialist type of player. At small forward, Chandler Parsons at 4,500, probably a bit too high on FanDuel, to be honest, for Chandler. He's been putting up some okay numbers, but it's more the 22-23 range rather than 24-25, and that might not seem like much, but it's enough for me to say probably not interested in him. Kevin Durant, 11,900. If you're throwing those CJ Williamses and Jameel Wilsons in, then Durant at 11,900 feels like almost a guarantee for 55 with that 70-point upside, so he is a strong cash and tournament player. At power forward, Jamichael Green's at 5,100, not interested in the slightest. Draymond at 8,900, tournament only. I wouldn't be looking too closely at him, though, in cash coming back from the shoulder, whereas Dave West at 43 and Jordan Bell at 44, they lose a lot of their value if Draymond is in. If Draymond is out, 44 for Jordy Bell is a cash and a tournament play. And Omri Caspi, I should have mentioned him in the small forwards. If we have Draymond and Zaza out, 46 for Omri is a very, very strong one. At center, Gasol, 8,200. We know that Warriors and centers is not a good mix, but the last three times that Mark has played against Golden State, he's averaged 43 points, which is obviously a fantastic return. I'm not ready to lock him in, though. But if Draymond is out, I think that he gets a bigger boost, and he can become a cash play if Green is out, but otherwise, tournaments and tournaments only. over on DraftKings for that one. I really only like Chandler Parsons because he's at 3,900, so a much cheaper option over there. Not much else that is really differs from FanDuel. You know, Durant at 11.6 is strong. Draymond with more value at 7,500, and I would actually consider that maybe a cash play if he is ready to go. And Tyreek at 7,000 is also in a pretty strong position. Let's now go and roll over the other sites on Yahoo. For GPPs, we're going to look at Alex Len, maybe even convert him to a cash guy. Caris LeVert is a GPP guy. Evan Turner, Jordan Mickey, Bogdan Bogdanovich, Frank Mason, Georgie Hill, Frank the Tank Kaminsky. And for cash, we've got Joshy Hart, Maxi Kleber, Chandler Parsons, DeJounte Murray, Trey Lyles, Reggie Bullock, Milos Teodosic, Bam Adebayo, Nick Batum, Julius Randle, Chrissy Dunn, Nick Vucevic, and Chris Paul. On Moneyball for tournaments, Chrissy Paul, Clint Capella, Lou Williams, Yusuf Nurkic, Alex Land, Bam Adebayo, Milos Teodosic, Jalen Brown, Ersan Ilyasova, Ravishing Rick Rubio, Domantas Sabonis, Justin Holiday, Evan Turner, Jordan Mickey, DeJounte Murray. And for cash, we've got Frank the Tank, Josh Hart, Reggie Bullock, Mario Hezonja, Kent Bazemore, Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, Chris Dunn, and Victor Oladipo. And rounding it out with draft stars for tournaments, it's Bam, it's Milos, it's Frank Mason III, Toby Harris, Evan Turner, Bryn Forbes, Budrick, Cauley Stein, Ersan, Zachy Collins, Nick Jokic, Chris Paul. And then we'll go on to cash. We've got Caris LeVert, Thaddeus Young, Chandler Parsons, Chris Dunn, Rudy Gay, Nick Batum, Spencer Dinwiddie, Bullock, Rivers, Mickey, Randle, Payton, and Josh Hart. If you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review and subscribe. It's a great way of helping the show, and it'd be great if you could do that. If you don't remember, my name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. You can also find the podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can give it a thumbs up, give it a subscribe, and leave a comment below. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Zach Randolph.